the toad. Waiting, wondering is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, light up my skirt. Get me out, be the biggest little flirt. Well, I might have...
Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
And welcome to the Shame-Free Zone. This is your host, Veronica Monet. And I've got a very special guest today. This is a pre-record, by the way, so if you're listening to this on the 25th of July, I'm not even here. I'm off in Portland, Oregon, attending a family reunion. But I hope you enjoy the program, and don't forget, this is usually a live call-in program, so we'll be back to Twittering and having you call in and Twitter your comments the following Saturday, which will be August 1st. But today my guest is Isadora Allman, and she is a marriage and family therapist. She's a board-certified sexologist and a California licensed psychotherapist and counselor. What I found particularly intriguing about her, though, is that she advertises herself as a sex therapist, and I am hoping that today she'll be able to shed some light on just exactly what a sex therapist does and does not do. Isadora, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for agreeing to be on the Shame-Free Zone. I understand that you have got a book called Doing It, Real People Having Really Good Sex. And you also have several columns. You've got Ask Isadora. I guess that's out of print now. But you've also got Sex Information, May I Help You, and Let's Talk Sex.
Those are Let's Talk Sex and is a collection of my syndicated column, which has been running in various papers for about 25 years and still is running in some papers.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, you're located in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, and you actually have a practice in the Alameda area.
Mm-hmm.
But so tell me a little bit, if you would, about, first of all, a board-certified sexologist, and through whom's board are you certified?
American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. That's ASECT.
ASECT. Awesome, mm-hmm. Awesome. That's a certification I would love to have. So I have a lot of respect for that one. I don't have that one. I'm certified through the American College of Sexologists, which is also mm-hmm. based in San Francisco. But no offense to them, but ASECT does have some pretty strict standards there. So.
A lot of hoops to jump through, yes, indeed.
They do. They really do. So, what is a sex therapist? Why do you call yourself a sex therapist? What do you do? What do you don't do? And do you get crazy phone calls from people who think you do real sex with them? Or?
I don't get a whole lot. Not as many as one would think, fortunately. I am, by a license, a California marriage and family therapist. It's not a term I like because most of the people I deal with are not legally married. So I would prefer to call myself a relationship therapist, and part of most relationships, but not all, is a very strong sexual component, and that's something that I have a lot of training and interest in. So I don't know how one could be a relationship therapist without being a sex therapist and vice versa.
Well, you know, that's a really good point. And yet, as far as most MFTs, most marriage and family therapists, they don't get very much information about sexuality at all. As a matter of fact, most medical doctors only get about 12 hours of sex
education. Absolutely.
Education.
I have lectured at medical schools. I have lectured at groups of marriage and family therapists. There's precious little. And so one hopes that a marriage and family therapist or a licensed, social worker who doesn't feel competent will refer to somebody like me who is an experienced sex therapist.
What I'm finding that for myself now, I am not a licensed therapist such as yourself, but because I offer advice and I have to be very careful in the state of California not to take counseling, but I offer people, modalities, healing modalities around sexuality. A lot of my clients are actually coming from their therapist's office. It's like their therapist seems to hit a wall where there's only so much that they're able to help them with when it comes to sex. And I think the big one, of course, is just the cultural overlay of sexual shame, which a lot of times has not been challenged by healthcare professionals. So they're kind of, you know, continuing to transmit that sexual shame even to their patients. What do you think about that?
I agree. If you're not, I mean, it's the same with parents teaching children. If you're not comfortable with the topic, for whatever reason, because you feel ignorant, because it's embarrassing to you, then you're going to transmit that discomfort to whomever you're dealing with, whether it's your child or your client or your patient. So yeah, it's always better to say, this is something I don't know a great deal about, or this is something I'm not very comfortable about. Let me put you into the hands of somebody who does know and is comfortable.
Now, how do you think you got comfortable with the topic of sex, and how come you don't think you're burdened with the, you know, this shame?
Well, I grew up in the same country that most Americans grew up in, and I grew up in the 50s, and there was a whole lot of shame crap involved with it. One place that was very instrumental in ridding me a lot of that is San Francisco Sex Information's training for volunteers.
Awesome, isn't it?
It is. It is a wonderful training. I took that in the late 70s, and it was like arriving in nirvana. Here was a whole bunch of disparate people, old and young and all orientations and so forth, willing to disclose who they are and what they want and what they're afraid of. I mean, it was such intimacy, such growth. It was just marvelous.
I think it's amazing. I also certified through them, and I love the couple of exercises really stood out for me, one of them being, you know, where you have to sit with a partner and actually just say dirty words, quote-unquote dirty words, over and over again without having an emotional or visceral response to them so that you can get past your judgments and your knee-jerk reactions to certain words.
They have that for the word issue. They have it for the visuals, the famous display of visuals, which I don't know whether we can say on the air.
Well, that's an adult station, so yes, we can say the word, what is it, fuckerama?
It's called the fuckerama, yes indeed. And it's about 45 minutes of multiple visual images, from pornography to advertising to sex education to animal husbandry. I mean, there's all sorts of things until you don't know where to look. You're gasping and gaping, and eventually, after about 30 minutes, it's, oh, yeah, I've seen that. Okay. And that's just marvelously liberating.
Yeah, I got to tell you something. Two things that I had a response to. First of all, they didn't, the sex, the bestiality film, they had a bestiality film of sex with a dog.
At least one, yes.
Yeah, well, it broke the day I graduated, so I didn't get to see it, and I was really pissed off.
I'm sure you could imagine it.
I've been on the internet trying to find it, but I can't seem to find anything that's as good as what they promised at San Francisco Sex Information.
And I remember the ones of elephants having sex. That was fascinating to me.
Yes. Well, then the other thing was that it started off, I mean, there was some beautiful porn on there that I personally resonated with and was actually doing great things for my libido. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. It's like being invited to this fabulous feast. And then towards the end, they started introducing some fetishes that actually nauseated me, in particular the scatology. You know, I just, for our listeners who may not know what that is, these are people who are into eating and rolling around in human excrement. So I went home that night and I couldn't hardly eat my dinner. It's like, so I got completely overloaded. It burned out my fuses.
That it was exactly the point. I mean, it wasn't the point of the fuckarama, the point of the exercises of talking about the slang terms and so forth, is to get past your shock, your sexual arousal, your nausea, all the stuff that all sex brings up for so many people, and get to the fact that, oh, yeah, that's all part of sex. Now let us move on.
Yeah.
I was so blown away by that first training at San Francisco Sex Information. I wrote my first book, Sex Information, May I Help You, is about the SFISI training, about my experiences and about the kind of questions that came in over the phone line. It's now also an online, but at that time there was no online, so it was simply a phone line that people called in and the trained volunteers answered all sorts of questions about sex. And that it's amazing that here it is, 2009, and it's still going strong.
Well, it absolutely is still going strong, and it's still incredibly relevant because we're still living in such a sex-negative culture. Now, I'm looking at your list of books here. It looks like you've got Sex Information, May I Help You?
That was the one.
That came out in 92.
Well, you see, that was originally came out as Oral Sex and Verbal Intercourse, a title which I absolutely love, but it got so much flack. Every time I did a radio interview, I'd have to spell it. No, that's oral sex. A-U-R-A-L. No, it's not about sex with auras. No.
Well, you may not have got that yet. It's not oral, it's aural, meaning that you listen. It's sex that you listen to. Oh, we have a caller. Caller, hello.
Welcome to Veronica. Well, I wasn't prepared to talk about sex online or on the radio, but I can do that.
No, it's okay. You have a question?
Yeah. How do I get in a physical position? That means, and I don't mean my body. I mean, how do I move to a certain area, and it's San Francisco is my thinking, and enable a woman to find me? Because I know at my age, I'm 67, I don't find women, they find me, but I have to be in the right place. What do you
suggest? I can give you about 20 places in any place you are in the United States where women will find you. You don't have to come to San Francisco. Even if you're
don't
in
know.
East, you might be in East Calflop, Kentucky. But I promise you, if you go to the gardening society, if you go to any kind of ERA or women's rights organization, if you go to anything like that, you're going to find women. And as you know, the numbers are very much in your favor.
Well, yeah, most everybody has died off by now.
Oh, not at all.
Isadora, I'm going to weigh in on this one, too. Caller, can I ask you what your name is, or are you preferring to stay anonymous today?
No. I assume you're talking to me. No, I'm not anonymous at all. I'm a child custody litigator, Gary O'Neill. Well, actually, it's changing.
Hi, Gary. I really appreciate
it's
you
really
calling
Gabrielle.
In today. So,
it's really
Gabrielle.
It's really Gabrielle.
Where are you located?
Hello, I didn't hear that. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Where are you located?
I'm located in the hottest, driest, brownest, flattest place in California. Anybody want to chime in on this?
That's okay.
Jerry,
it's Bakersfield, California.
Bakersfield. Well, yeah, okay. I can see where you might feel like there's a dearth of social things to do. But I'd like to ask you a little bit about your dating history. Are you recently divorced or widowed? Or
4 years ago, divorced. I'm a divorce lawyer, and I was divorced for the second time 4 years ago.
4 years ago. And have you tried online dating or anything like that?
Oh, God. It's a horrible, horrible place. Horrible. People expect more out of you when you're 67 and a male than they did a lot more than when you were 20 years old.
Well, of course.
Every woman wants a perfect man when he is 67 and she's not far behind. That's what I've found out.
Well, let's focus on what you want. What do you want?
I want a woman who is A, educated, B, well-traveled, C, well-read, and has a sense of humor.
It sounds like you've got a pretty exacting list of requirements yourself.
No, I don't really.
Well, you do.
Oh, okay.
The list you just gave me is actually a pretty demanding list.
Yeah,
and yet
well,
I know at least 50 women who, between the ages of, let's say, 45 and 85, which is a pretty good span for a man in his 60s, who would
yeah.
fit your bill. Now, they may not be sexually attracted to you or you to them,
sure.
but that's a broad spectrum of women, many of whom probably don't hang out in Bakersfield. You're right.
So let me
Absolutely.
Ask you another question, Gary. What do you have an age requirement?
Not really. No, I
so,
want some.
Are you open to dating women your age or older?
Well, I've never done it, but hey, I'm open to anything.
Well, what age group do you usually date?
Well, I don't usually date. I deliberately have taken myself out of the marketplace because most of the women here have more tattoos than teeth.
Okay, so now I want you to just take a breath with me here for a minute.
I'm doing it.
Okay. And I want to point out to you what you've just told me, okay? So people always ask me, how do you get this information? I just listen. Now, I'm listening to how you basically have created a no-win situation for yourself, okay?
Thank you.
So one of the things that you're telling me, first of all, is that all the women suck and online dating is horrible. So that
Mostly.
Really doesn't create an opening for anything positive to happen. The second
mm-hmm.
thing that you've created for yourself is this idea that all these women are very demanding and they want a lot of stuff from me, but you're not really showing up with this awareness that you're also being very demanding and want a lot of stuff from them. So
undoubtedly
you know,
true.
Okay. And then the second thing is, how could you possibly achieve your goal of dating if you've taken yourself out of the dating market intentionally?
Well, I don't like going out for a cheap
Wait a minute. I don't want to get into the argument about whether you're going to put yourself back into the dating market. I just
right.
want you to take responsibility for the fact that you took yourself out.
Oh, I do. I've done it for a reason.
Stop right there for just a minute. Bear with me. I'm going to give you a chance to talk, but I want you to just stay
sure.
with that thought.
I'm staying
with intentionally,
you.
Gary.
I'm here.
Okay. If you've intentionally taken yourself out of the market, that would be a really good reason why you're not meeting anybody.
No, it is the biggest reason. And
okay.
I've done it because Bakersfield are full of women that I find horribly they're not my kind of people.
We're going to keep this to some quick fixes because just remember, this is what I do on the phone, and if you really want to go into this in detail, let's set up an appointment and you and I can talk about this. You can also set up an appointment
okay.
with Dora, of course.
Let's do this quick and dirty. I don't care.
Quick and dirty
sure.
is you need to find a positive way of thought in order to create something positive. So if you've got a negative attitude, you're going to pull in exactly what you're expecting. You're expecting everybody to be tattooed and uneducated and unacceptable. Well, you're going to see a lot of that.
Seeing a lot of that. I've been to a lot of these websites.
You're seeing exactly what you expect to see.
Exactly. And you're going to tell me that it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, right?
Unfortunately, that's how life works.
Sure. you're wrong.
But I want you to also take a look at the idea that you are expecting, you don't want a lot of demands put on you, but you would like to put demands. So
not
look
so.
At that and be thinking about the
not
fairness
so.
Of that.
Veronica, that's not true. No, it is not true.
Okay.
I expect them to have expectations of me that are reality-based. What I am tired of are women saying, well, you're this because I recently talked to a woman in Scotland in a very
okay.
remote island. I didn't think, what kind of person would live on a remote island? But she said, you're not witty. You're not charming. Like, she has this unrealistic expectation of what an Irish person would be. It's stereotypic.
I gotcha. Isadora.
I'm here.
Yeah. Go. Why don't you weigh on this? He's not witchy enough. What do you have to say about that?
What I have to say is, Jerry, is that what it is?
No, it's actually, call me Gabe.
Gabe, okay.
Gabe,
let us, without asking you to change any of your criteria, if you say the women in Bakersfield are not to your liking, for whatever reason, their dental habits or their education or their skin decor, then you have a choice of either getting yourself out of Bakersfield or finding some way to connect with women who are not in Bakersfield. So that advertising, pen pals, the internet, a dating club. I mean, there's got to be some way for you to tap into the fact that there are far more educated women in their 60s than there are educated men in their 60s available for dating.
Just a minute. You're putting me in a wrong box.
You're not educated.
No. No, you think that all I want are PhD candidates who are...
I didn't say that at all. I just said educated. You said you wanted the women that where you are not educated, and so I'm assuming you want women who are educated, right?
No, there are educated women here, but most are married. There is
a huge...
They're conservative in terms of sex and religion.
Okay,
and
so you want open-minded, non-conservative women.
Correct.
I mean, the more you narrow down what it is that you want, the more likely you are to focus on where they are so that you can put yourself there.
True. I am moving to South San Francisco.
Okay.
And as soon as I can sell this mobile home, I'm out of here.
Okay, but what are you going to do when you get to South San Francisco? Wherever you put your carcass, you're still going to be there, and there are not going to be women knocking on your door. A lot of women are not going to go out alone. They don't go to worship services. They don't go to dances. So how are you going to connect with them?
Well, actually, some unusual places. Restaurants.
Okay, so you're hoping that you will be able to strike up a conversation with a strange woman in a restaurant.
Yes, and I've done it. And I lived in New Orleans, which is a lot freer sexually and religiously than any place that I've been. I just go up to a woman who looks attractive. I check out her left hand to see if there's a ring on it. And I say to her, excuse me, do you have a man in your life?
Jerry, I am a single woman in your age category, educated, and unless you are so devilishly attractive that all my principles would fly out the window, I wouldn't want to respond to a man who approached me like that in a restaurant.
Well, I know, but some women do. You know, it's the old joke about a guy who says goes up to a woman and says, I want sex now. And he said, I have my face slapped. 99 times out of 100.
You know
the answer to this, right?
Of course
I
do.
Yeah.
So, Gabe, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Okay. So it sounds like you started this conversation off with a question. It was what can I do and where can I go to meet the kind of women that I want to meet? And at this point, Isadora and I have both made some recommendations, and you have come to the, I already know what I'm doing, I'm moving to San Francisco, and I'm going to go try to hit up on women in restaurants. So
no, that's not true. That's just an example of some things that I would do.
Okay.
I wear kilts.
I'm just using that as an example of the fact that when you are offered other alternatives, you pretty much say you've already got a plan and you're going to do it
your
way.
No, that's not true. You're putting me in a box.
Let me ask you something.
And I'm going to jump out of it if you're trying to put me in it. I wear kilts, and I have a very cute dog.
How can we help you?
Well, let me tell you my life space a little bit in about two words. You know, I wear kilts, and I have a cute dog who's a show dog.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the cutest show dog I've ever seen in my life, but there's not many of them around. So that's why when I go into a cafe with a kilt on, usually it's an outdoor one, and my dog next to me, my dog gets picked up and I get picked up.
Okay, that's great. I still don't understand how Isadora and I can help you.
Well, I want some... the problem is we're on radio, and it's one of those soundbite problems, you know? It's easy to put a guy like me in a box and say, "Oh, he's a chauvinist pig," and he's uptight sexually.
I cannot have you in a box as a chauvinist
right.
pig, and I get that you are a very interesting person with a kilt and a dog, and I think it's awesome, but I still don't know how we can help you.
Well, I called in because I saw Veronica's picture, number one. I see that she was born in April, which is my birthday, which means she's likely as not an Aries.
I am.
Let's talk about sun signs, Linda Goodman stuff. I'm looking for a Leo or a what's the other one? There's two. Oh, there's Aquarians and Leos. And you may not like the idea that I'm looking shopping for women using sun signs, but I am.
I don't see anything wrong with that at all.
Oh, cool. Good. We're there. So I'm looking for Leos and Aquarians wearing a kilt and have a cute dog.
You are looking for that, or you're looking for women that are looking for that?
That's the latter.
So you want women who are looking for a Leo... So are you running an ad online with that?
No. Yeah, well, yes, I am. Pardon me. I'm on the BBC. It's guardiansoulmates.co.uk. It's the best website in the world for meeting people. And I am putting myself out there. I'm marketing myself, you might say, like that. I am a wild and crazy, hairy-ass Irish lawyer looking for love in all the wrong places. So, nothing
well,
is absurd.
If there's something you think that Isadora and I can do to help you, we'd be happy to.
Yeah, send me a woman.
Sorry, we can't do that. But we appreciate your call. All right. We're going to go back to the show, Gary, and we thank you so much for your call. Isadora?
Yes.
How you doing?
I'm here.
Okay. So I would imagine you get phone calls like this from time to time.
I don't take phone calls, Veronica. If someone calls me, I quickly say, what is it you want, like you were trying to establish with this guy, and how can I be of help to you? You know, would you like to find a place, a method of finding women that you're attracted to? Would you like to narrow down your style of attracting them? You know, all of those things I can help you with. But I can't introduce you to Madam X or Miss Y. I don't run a dating service, a mating service, a prostitution service. So I would ask the same way you. How can I be of help to you? So
I think the thing that is very difficult for anybody, man or woman of any age group, is that when people go out into the dating arena, they encounter similar scripts over and over again. They're like seeing, it's like, why do I keep meeting this kind of guy? Why do I keep meeting this kind of woman? Everybody's this, everybody's that. And, of course, the world, there's 6.5 billion people on this planet. The world is full of diversity. There's just a million different kinds of personalities and lifestyles and people. So if you're meeting the same kind of people over and over again, it might be tempting to indict your location and say, well, it has something to do with this country, this state, this city. And there is perhaps a modicum of truth to that. But I think mostly what happens in life is that we pull in people who resonate with our energy, and they bring life lessons, and they give us an opportunity to see who we are and what we're about. And if we want to change that, the first person we have to change is ourselves.
Well, the example I give to clients like this is, what would you say to someone who runs a personal ad that says, very generous gentleman, looking for a partner, And then he says, you know, all I get are gold diggers.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, this is precisely what's happening, you know. If you say, whatever it is, highly sexed man looking for a partner, all I get are cheap floozies, well, you know, what are you leading with? What's your open... So, again, if he's going to walk around with a dog under his arm and a kilt and try to pick up women in restaurants, it's a very small percentage of women who are going to turn on to this. But
oh,
you know, he needs a few.
Personally, I don't think there's anything wrong with his approach. I think it's great. I say more power to you. But here's the problem that I actually see a lot of people do is they're not actually ready for what they want to pull in. People are always trying to move forward. They're trying to move forward before they've processed any of the stuff that they're dragging along with them. So if you don't understand why you got divorced and you haven't processed any grief or anger or resentment that you have towards your former partner, if you haven't dealt with any of that stuff and you're just trying to move forward on the premise that I've got to find the right partner, yeah, that last person sucked. I'm going to go find somebody that's perfect for me, but you don't have any insight on what you bring into a relationship, you're probably going to find yourself discontented and upset, even if you were pulling exactly what you wanted, because you're not ready to be happy.
Well, I can't argue with that, and I still would take a person where they are and try to help them to move forward. When I see a client in my office, I really don't want to go back all the way to their toilet training. I don't want to go through every miserable aborted relationship that they had. I simply want to start where you are.
Yeah. I don't do that either, by the way. I'm no interest in that either. But this I think it is eminently pertinent what the last relationship looked like. So we don't have to go back to the childhood, but we can certainly find out what was the script of your last relationship.
You can find out what did you miss in the last relationship. I have a sort of a little cheat sheet that I give to people that tries to ascertain their patterns so they can see it. I don't need to see it. You know, how did you meet the last person that you were attracted to? Who initiated? What was the good part of the relationship? What was the bad part of the relationship? Did you end it or did they end it? What were you missing in that relationship that you want in the next relationship? And sometimes people will get to see, oh, you know, I'm always the one that's doing the choosing and the person's not that turned on to me. So maybe I want to try having somebody choose me. Or I always met them in bars and they all turned out to be lushes. Well, maybe you're not looking in the right place to find someone who's not likely to be a lush. You know, so their patterns are relevant to what they do next. But I do think it's important to look at what are you looking for and where are you likely to find that. I mean, a matter of fishing in the right fishing pans.
I think we have a little bit of different style, which is wonderful because there's so many different people that you can go to for assistance. But I personally have, you know, like just speaking to this caller, it was obvious that he's angry. You know, he's a very angry person. So it's what's the anger about? I think that's important. I don't think he has to stay angry. And I think just, you know, telling him to place a better ad or have a different come on line is not going to do anything to help his baseline anger, which is what's pulling in a lot of this negativity. So I think that is an important thing to address, is like, what are you so angry about?
Well, I would simply say you're coming across as angry. I don't care. I don't care what he's so angry about. He might not even think he's angry. I'm saying, you know, to me, that is how it's coming across, probably to some other women as well. Do you want to come across that way? You know, if you don't, then let's look at how come you're coming across that way. And you pointed out, you know, you seem to have an answer to everything I say.
Right.
You know,
well,
yes, but.
He's not looking for answers.
He's looking
for an opportunity to complain.
And
a lot of people are. I mean, it's like, you know, they have a lot of complaints. I understand that. I understand. I me too, you know,
yep.
But it's not a productive course of action for me if I just spend all my time complaining, because it doesn't ever move me forward into something positive.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah. So do you want to tell us a little bit about what it is that, as a sex therapist, you think you offer your clients that they can't find with just any licensed marriage and family therapist?
Well, you know, just look at you and me. We all have different styles. We all have different expertise. I really do know a lot about how humans get their sexual pleasure. And so I would have a lot of resources available. I have a lot of information so that a person can see where they fall within the grand scope of things. I can normalize what they do so they don't feel like some sort of a freak. I can make suggestions about where they're likely to either find a partner or how they're likely to woo a partner into participating in the things that they like to do. The kind of clients I might see are couples who are not having good sex, or they are at some kind of sexual loggerheads.
Now, let's take the whole idea of a couple that's not having good sex. What's the first course of action or questions or what, I don't know, you know, what can they
What expect? Is it that you want? I mean, that to me, that's always, what is it that you're looking for? What do you want? What is good sex to you? And when did you have good sex? What were the components of it? And so if I find that partner one likes to have sex in bed in the mornings, and partner two likes to have sex on the floor in the evenings, mm-hmm. you know, having sex on a chair at noon probably wouldn't be an ideal compromise.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to, you know, and I would put it just that way. So clearly you want more of the sex in bed and you want more of the sex on the floor. And, you know, what would induce you? What would be the payoff for you to accommodate your partner? What would you want in exchange? What is it about the floor or the bed that makes that the ideal place for you, or morning or night? And so I would bring them to some sort of understanding about their wants and must-haves and needs, and some kind of skill in negotiating some sort of an agreeable settlement between the two of them.
So it's kind of an exchange almost, like I'll show up for the sex that you want if you show up for the sex that I want.
That's certainly one way of doing it. Sometimes a partner will say, I'll give you exactly the sex that you want it and how you want it if you will do these kind of things in the household. You know, you wash the dishes all the time, and I'll be willing to have sex in the morning even though I prefer it at night. It's not always a sexual negotiation. You know,
yeah.
Sometimes I want more flowers, and then I'll be more accommodating to you.
Yeah,
but
do with people who come to you with, since this is the shame-free zone, I would ask you some questions about shame, like people who might be afraid to tell their partner that they're into some form of fetish or BDSM or
mm-hmm.
something like that.
We acknowledge that the fear probably is, if they can't put a finger on it, that your partner's going to say, you want to do what? You know, that they'll find you weird or repellent or horrifying or immoral or, you know, some negative judgment. And that's real. You know, that is a risk. So are you willing to take the risk of disclosing who you are with the hopeful payoff that you will get what you want? Or are you willing to do without and just hope that, you know, the universe will provide it? Well, most people want to be just a bit more proactive than they are. And then we look at how might you ascertain your partner's feelings about this particular kink that you have. You know, there are ways to bring it up rather than, honey, I want to tell you, here it is, I want to wear your underwear, you know, or here I am in your underwear, how do you feel about that? I mean, there are ways to approach the big revelation that are more likely to get you what you want. And that's part of the things that I would work with.
Yeah. Now, and have you ever encountered people who are maybe having gender identity issues?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
For instance?
Well, there are people who say, there is this belief, for instance, that heterosexual men don't have anuses. You know, that if there's any pleasure, if they like being touched there or kissed there or penetrated, then they must be gay.
Right.
So how can I be gay if So that kind of confusion is put on us by society. So I normalize the fact that we all have anuses. Some people like them stimulated, some people do not like them stimulated. Or, in our society, women can wear men's clothing perfectly comfortably in any place, but men cannot wear women's clothing in most places. Yes, that's unfair, so what would you like to do about it? I mean, I am very practical, Veronica. If what you want is a Libra partner, how are we going to find you a Libra partner? I'm not going to try to dissuade you that you might be better with a Sagittarius. I'm simply going to point out to you that you have just eliminated 11/12 of all the potential partners on the planet. But if that's what you want to do, let's go ahead with it.
So what's that, the anal sex? Are men and women equally equipped to enjoy that, or does one gender have plumbing that maybe enjoys anal sex more, or how does that work?
There certainly is an added benefit in anal intercourse for men in that they have the prostate, which is pleasurably stimulated by intercourse, and women don't have that prostate. So a man is more likely to enjoy being anally penetrated if he hasn't bought into the society's notion that that makes him something, one way or the other. It questions his orientation.
Right.
There are women who can have orgasms by anal penetration. There are men who don't like prostate stimulation. There's just no one size fits all for anything. There are some people.
So what do we think? If a woman enjoys anal sex orgasmically, what do we think stimulates that? She doesn't have a prostate, so what?
It doesn't have to be physiological. It could be simply the idea is very exciting, or because the position is exciting, or because it's taboo, or because, any number of reasons. And it could be the angle of penetration does in fact stimulate something inside that feels good to her. It could be hitting her G-spot through the wall. People are built in odd, there's variations in women, variations in men. So I just try to normalize what it is that they feel and let them know that there are other people who have that, do that, feel that way. And what you want to do is find a partner that enjoys it with you, or find a way to woo your partner into enjoying it with you.
Now, didn't they just discover something called the A spot and the U spot with women?
Oh, I don't know. You could go through the alphabet from A to Z and name it. No, the nipple is not the end spot. It's the nipple, And some people are really very excitable in one location and some people in another. There's a lot of women who don't like clitoral stimulation, but they're told in every which way, as we all are, that that's where a woman like to be stimulated. And so what about the poor woman who doesn't like her clitoris touched, who's far too sensitive? What about the guy who has no idea where the clitoris is? He just knows it's somewhere in that vicinity. So I try to let people know that there are no rules about this. There is no one right way. There is no one.
To know a little bit about it, though, just that for the listeners, the U spot is around the urethra of a woman. So the tissue extending from the opening of the vagina to the clitoris surrounding the urethra is considered the U spot. It's not necessarily an erogenous zone for all women, but it is for a lot of women. And then the A spot is at the anterior base of the cervix. Now, and this will play a lot to what you're saying, Isadora, because, they call it the A-spot because it's the anterior base of the cervix. So this speaks a lot about how some women really enjoy deep penetration. But I could have sworn it's to the right for me and has nothing to do with the anterior portion. So although I'm on board for the idea that there's an A-spot, there's a spot down back there at the base of my cervix that's very sensitive. I don't actually think that it's located where they say it is. And this says volumes about what you just said, which is that we are all constructed differently. And just like some women have different constellations of erectile tissue, behind the walls of the vagina, so that, you know, some women feel maybe nothing in certain areas, whereas other women are finding this to be an incredibly sensitive spot. So, yes, we are.
And the other thing is, too, Veronica, is that we all change. You know, what a woman really liked with partner A doesn't do a thing for her with partner B.
It's interesting you bring that up, because now I know menopause is a big issue for a lot of women. I'm wondering if you have anything you could share with our menopausal women listeners, because a lot of women have concerns about the vaginal walls thinning and perhaps drying out, and that maybe penetration could become painful. Is this a natural part of nature, or...
Our bodies change. I mean, that is a natural part of nature. Sometimes they change for the better, in that most of us, for instance, psychologically get a lot easier with strangeness. We're okay with a lot more than we were at 17. So that's a plus of getting older. Our breasts sag. That's a minus of getting older. The vaginal walls do thin. Sometimes that's a real impediment. And so there's something you can do about that. You can use a lubricant. You could take estrogen. You could, you know, there are things you can do about it. There are certain positions that are painful. There are certain positions that will not be so, so you may have to change that. But while many women do have a lessening of their libido after menopause, there is a certain percentage of women who have no change in their libido, and there is a certain percentage of women whose libido increases. So So it's partly what the person believes. You know, if you believe that you're not going to have any libido, you won't even notice signs that you have one.
Do you think our society is perhaps a little bit obsessed with procreative sexual styles? Like, there's all these other sexual styles, like BDSM and fetish and tantra. Tantra, which uses the breath, you don't even need to have penis-vagina sex, but it seems sometimes that we're really focused on whether or not we can get an erect penis or a fully lubricated vagina, and if we can't achieve those, then our sex life is lost or somehow or another doomed, and it seems like we're missing all these other ways of being sexual. What do you think?
I absolutely agree. Having sex means mostly having a penis and having a vagina. So therefore, men can't have sex with each other, or women can't have sex with each other, and that's how narrow it is. Or oral sex isn't sex because it's not, you know. So it's part of our job as educators, yours and mine, to broaden people's aspect of what is sexual, what feels good. If you want to call it an A spot, a U spot, a G spot, call it what you will. You have to find out what feels good to you. And if it feels good to you, then that's what you want from the person you're sharing pleasure with.
Yeah.
And whether we call it...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I part of my job with any clients who comes in with a problem is to make sure that we're talking about the same thing. You know, if they're not having satisfying sex, does that mean you're not having satisfying intercourse, or you know, not satisfying cuddling? Let's define our terms.
Now, do you give your, is there such a thing as sex surrogacy? This is, like a lot of people call up thinking a sex therapist is going to actually have sex with them or maybe watch them have sex or something, and then people get that confused with sex surrogates. Can you help us understand the difference between that?
Yes, a sex therapist is a licensed therapist with a license of their state. And every state that has people helpers licensed will have a proscription against any kind of touching. So a licensed social worker, psychologist, marriage and family therapist is not going to touch their clients. You know, maybe they'll give them a friendly hug at the end of a session, but that's about it. There's nothing sexual that transpires. So that's a legal definition. A sexual surrogate is the I define to clients is a hands-on therapist of a sort. So this is a legal gray area. They are not licensed. It is not prostitution. It is a very specified, trained person who is willing to take you through things like breathing, body education of your body and the other sex's body, the sexual response cycle, and their work with you may or may not include nudity, intercourse, oral sex, and other things as the two of you decide between you what is necessary. And I have referred to surrogates on many occasions over the 25 years or so of my practice, and by and large, they've all been enormously productive arrangements for my clients.
Now, you said that's a legal gray area, and
yep.
It seems to me that it was more acceptable in the 70s, and now, you know, in the last few decades, it's become more suspect, so that there's actually fewer sex surrogates. Am I wrong about that, or is that true?
I don't know how many there are, Veronica. I mean, the people that I have referred to when I started working as a therapist in the early 80s, most of them are still working, so they're not young people any longer.
Right.
I'm sure there are new ones coming up. There is an International Professional Surrogates Association who trains these people. So I would look for somebody who is an IPSA-trained surrogate.
I'd
look for someone who has worked with a therapist, a psychotherapist before, and sort of is aware of what boundary issues or what's needed. I don't know what the climate is. I will tell a prospective client that this is a legal gray area. If they have ethical concerns about it or legal concerns, then this probably isn't the way to go, and we will find some other way to tackle whatever their issue is.
Yeah.
But for those who aren't bothered by it, I think it's just wonderfully helpful.
Are you familiar with San Francisco's sexological body worker program?
Uh-huh.
That was introduced by Joseph Kramer, where there's actual people get certified or actually, I think they get a PhD in sexological body worker, and there is tons of touching going on.
But they're not licensed psychotherapists. I'm talking about the state licensed. You know, they're massage workers also. There are certain medical professionals.
I was asking you if you refer to sexological body workers and if you know anything about that.
I know about it, but by and large, if there is someone who is going to be touching this client in a way that is going to be construed as sexual, I'm probably going to refer them to a sexual surrogate because I know them and have worked with them before.
I got you.
I generally don't make referrals to anybody that I don't know because I try to get a sense of, will this be a good match? Will this other therapist, whether it's a psychotherapist, a massage therapist, a body worker, a surrogate, is this going to be a good connection with this person?
Well, I guess the next question would be, since you said that it is immensely helpful working with a sex surrogate, do you ever feel that the division of that we have to have a therapist who doesn't touch and then a sex surrogate who will touch, do you ever feel that is an arbitrary division, or do you think there's a good reason that that's in place?
It's probably a good reason. You know, I think we're pretty uptight about touching these days, but I also think there's an enormous amount of people who don't have good, strong boundaries, who take advantage of people who are in a position to be taken advantage of, you know, whether it's clergymen, whether it's psychotherapists, whether it's school teachers. I mean, to me, it is unethical and immoral to be sexual with somebody who's coming to you for help on some level.
Right.
So I can understand that there are doctors who want to sleep with their patients. There are teachers who want to sleep with their students. There are therapists who would like to have sex with their clients. But it's probably a good idea that there are restrictions on what those relationships can and cannot include.
Okay. But yet the surrogate's work is very worthwhile. So we're basically just, I guess I'm still confused about the difference between the sex therapist and the sex surrogate. So maybe you can just in the
sex
last
therapist week. is a psychotherapist, a counselor. I mean, we just deal with sexual issues as opposed to parental issues or work related issues.
Right.
I mean, there's nothing that goes on
in my office.
I'm
clear that there's no touching, but I'm just trying to figure out, does the sex surrogate also work with education and those issues, but also
yes.
touches?
And can include touching, yes. So if I'm saying to a client in my office, let me show you how the penis, begins to engorge and get stiff. I might wait, as I'm doing here on the phone with you, I might be working with a pencil, waving it in the air and pointing it one way or the other.
Right.
A sex surrogate might say, all right, I'd like you to begin to masturbate and notice that when this happens, in other words, she is encouraging the client to be sexual. Or
right.
she'll say, may
right.
I touch you? And she will reach out and do it.
Okay.
But I would never do that.
The point being that the sex surrogate somehow or another is not in a position to abuse that power. That's the confusion for me.
No. You're going to somebody. You're going to the person for a specific issue. I want to learn how to last longer if I have, I want to learn how to have an orgasm or something. And it's like going to a tennis coach. They're going to have hands-on as opposed to my showing you videos or pictures or reading books and so forth. I'm sure there are surrogates who have been abusive too, but it's not likely. It's not a big power imbalance, I don't think, the way there is, for instance, in a doctor-patient or a lawyer-client kind of
thing. And that power imbalance is because the authority accrued to the doctor, or is it because of the fact that the doctor is working with the emotional and psychological issues?
No, I think it's because of the power that the client, the patient, invests in their helper. I'm one down. So you know everything. I know nothing. You're wiser. You're stronger. You're older. And,
yeah.
Gotcha. It's the whole thing like with that happened with priests and clergymen.
Right.
It is a position of power and trust. With the surrogate, it's more a service. I'm going to you for this service, and I expect to touch and be touched, but we still have to talk about it.
Gotcha. Okay, well, this has been really educational. I'm going to have to draw the show to a close, but quickly, how can people contact you for your services, and also do you have a new book or anything coming out that we need to know about?
I wish I had a new book, but I don't. My website probably has more than anybody wants to know about me, but it's there. I have an online free sexuality forum where people can take place in discussions, ask questions, give answers. They can see what my books are. They can find out what my background is. It's askisadora.com, and I can be reached there, and I would certainly invite some of your listeners to come there and ask their questions and take part in the discussions.
Very cool. Very cool. And Isadora, thank you so much for being a guest, and hopefully we can have you back sometime.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking with you, Veronica.
Have a great day. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me.
Sering kesepian.